Don't drive as the teams are out in force this weekend, and we don't need any phone calls to come get me out of those places with bars. Metal bars, not drinking bars. So talk to you later. See you guys. Have a great weekend.
One summer night.
This is WHFR, Dearborn.
Are you stuck at a dead-end boring job with no chances for a promotion? Or maybe you don't have a job at all. If this sounds like you, it's time to stand up and start marching your life in a new direction. I'm talking about getting the education and training you will need to stay ahead in this changing job climate. Henry Ford Community Colleges have been educating our local community for over 70 years. With more than 100 different programs and nearly 1,000 different courses, there's something for everyone at HFCC. To learn about all the different areas of study at Henry Ford Community College and about how HFCC can save you time and money with financial aid, a tuition freeze guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a credit transfer guarantee, visit them online at www.hfcc.edu or call 1-800-585-HFCC. Registration is going on now for the 2009 fall semester. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
Good afternoon. What time did I get up today? And welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is July the 3rd, 2009. That is just one day ahead of Independence Day. That is right, the birthday of our country. And we'll have comment from Jim Hightower later in the hour. It's a print comment, so I'm going to be using my voice for his words. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. I'm the station advisor here at WHFR-FM. Remember, do as I say, not necessarily as I do. And with me today in the studio as my co-host is Ned Apigian. Welcome back, Ned.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's always an honor. What's happening in Dearborn Heights these days?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Since all the action is in Dearborn with 20-some people wanting to be council persons.
Yeah, we want to talk about that. 25 people running for Dearborn Council in the primary. In fact, I might as well mention this up front, people, because you've got your pencil sharpened, because you know you have to take notes for the journal show, because we say so many important things and give you phone numbers and addresses and so on. Just joking, really. But what's happening is that primary is going to be August 4th. So don't wait till Dearborn Homecoming, which doesn't start till the 7th, to say, well, I'll find out about the candidates at Homecoming, and then I'll go vote the next Tuesday.
I guess they'll all be there, huh?
No, because the election will already be over, the primary election.
Oh, the primary.
That's what I'm saying, is that because Homecoming weekend, starting with a Friday, starts on the 7th, they can't change the date of the primary, which is always the first Tuesday. And so in this case, sure, the winners of the top 14 out of the 25 that will go on to the November election that they'll finally reduce to the 7 Dearborn Council members, they will be around Homecoming. But
they'll appear for sure.
Yeah, because you know, each of them wants their time in the sun. But unfortunately, those other 11, and we don't know which 11 they'll be, will be eliminated on August 4th in that election, if anybody goes to vote. And it's interesting that in Dearborn, I haven't even gotten my recommendation from my
legal
little
women,
card in the mail
the legal
to vote.
Daughters?
No, I'm talking about, I haven't seen that yet either, although it's available at their website. And supposedly it was available last week. League of Women Voters has a fact sheet. And that supposedly applies to Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, too, by the way, about all the candidates that are going to be on the ballot and little bios or something.
Because we're not going to have a primary in Dearborn Heights. It's probably, they haven't done their interview yet.
I think it's, that's true, but I don't know if they're going to come up with another publication before November, or whether this one applies to
just the primary.
Everything, just the primary. Yeah. So we'll see about that. But what I wanted to say is that starting next week, in Dearborn, seniors can go and request absentee ballots. And yet, who knows anything about who's running, except all the incumbents are running, of course. They have name recognition. Last week, I mentioned that I've only gotten one direct mail ad, which I think is early, but Suzanne Serini, who's an incumbent on the council, she sent that around. And they have different mailings to different parts of the city, too. So just because I live in East Dearborn doesn't mean that she sent it to people in West Dearborn. Because it's expensive to send those things in the mail, and sometimes they target certain zip codes if they think it's going to be more beneficial.
Not in the primary. Based on my knowledge, they usually look at who voted last time.
Yeah,
and they can. I know that I only address myself to who voted last time.
Right. Ned is, we have to say in full disclosure here, one of the candidates for Dearborn Heights City Council, but of course his name won't be on the ballot until November, because they don't need a primary. They don't have an extra large number of people that have to be narrowed down to whatever the minimum would be.
The rule is one more than the vacancy.
Oh, really? Yeah.
If there's four vacancies, then there are four challengers. It's a total of 8.
Okay.
That's why in Dearborn it's 7 times 2 is 14.
Right, but we have 25 names out there now.
Eliminate 11.
Exactly.
I don't know. In the Dearborn race, is the clerk or the treasurer have competition in the primary?
Not in Dearborn.
Not in Dearborn. Neither in Dearborn Heights.
No, didn't happen that way. And although I think technically Mayor O'Reilly has a challenger, at least his name was on the ballot, I'm not sure that challenger is going to campaign very much. It's not a major name. There's been no mention of it.
Well, as long as he only has one challenger, there will be no primary.
No, he won't be on. The primary is only for Dearborn, and it's for city council candidates coming up. But my point is, don't miss it, folks. If you're not registered to vote, like maybe you got to do it first thing this week, because we're only a month away. Also, if you have to have an absentee ballot, if you're going to be out of town on August 4th, take care of it now. You know, you got to put in a request for it, and then they'll send it to you in the mail. You can call them, and they'll send you the card, and then you fill in the card and send it back, and then they send you the ballot, which you then have to send back by a certain date. Or
people who've done it before have that process. They
it's not automatic, but
right. They ask you if you want a ballot.
But I haven't gotten my little card in the mail saying, I want it again? So I don't know what's happening there. Our blues DJ, Joanne, following us here at 2 o'clock, she lives in West Dearborn. She's already gotten that request. Do you want to have an absentee ballot again? And I've done absentee ballots for the last couple of years, and
well, that's strange. Yeah, if you don't get one soon, that'd go in quick.
Well, I live not too far from the city hall, so I can just swing by there and go in the clerk's office. I was going to mention that if you really know who you're going to vote for, you can just go to the city clerk's office, request the absentee ballot there, fill out the little form at their desk, and then vote right there and hand it right back to them. I mean, if you knew, I think it's a good idea to see what the names are on the ballot and find out more about the candidates and actually wait till the last minute to see if there's any more, you know, big campaign revelations or dirt that's being thrown that might come up in the last few minutes. So
one of the problems with that, it's really discouraging for candidates. The law requires them to mail the ballots out 30 days before the election.
Yeah.
So that means 30 days before August 4th is pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who get those things usually fill them out before they've had a chance to see the access programs and the newspaper articles.
Newspaper articles. Newspaper recommendations. Sometimes the editors give recommendations.
All the candidates are asked to make statements, answer questions.
Yeah.
And so this process of sending those ballots out so early really shortcuts the process.
Well, and it also helps the candidates, local candidates who have extra bunches of money, because they can do two mailings.
Or recognition.
Well, but you see, they can do a mailing that gets to the seniors, like Suzanne Serini's did, before they even see their ballot. So they have that ad there. And then she can do a mailing later, right before the actual election, for those people that just go to the polls directly. So that means the system with the absentee ballots, it favors candidates that have greater financial resources.
The real trick is to find out when the clerk is mailing. And when they get the ballot, you want your literature to arrive not a day before or a day after, but the same day the ballot does, because some of those people fill out that ballot that first day.
Right away, yeah.
The other interesting fact that voters don't seem to know about or care, 3 out of 4 votes will probably be absentee voters in this election because there's no other issue, and most people will not vote. So those of you who vote have the power of 10. So if that doesn't encourage you to vote, go ask our Minnesota brand new senator how important 312 votes were to him.
Al Franken finally won. Exactly. And there's not even Dearborn Homecoming to remind them of the primary, because the primary this time comes before homecoming. So, okay. Well, I just want to make a brief comment about what was in the press and guide last Sunday. Ford Motor Company, and I know you probably heard this from other media, gets $6 billion. It's a loan. It's not, you know, giveaway, bailout money or anything. But it's part of the $25 billion that the government passed last fall to help develop fuel-efficient vehicles at a variety of companies. And the first loans that are going out are to Ford Motor Company, about $5.9 billion, and $2.1 billion, this is what I wanted to stress, is not just the Ford loans, but $2.1 billion to Nissan. Okay, so there's U.S. government money that's going out to a foreign car manufacturer.
That's terrible.
But they do have plants in this country, so
I don't care if they have every plant in this country.
And the only company in America that's currently making all-electric cars, just a two-seat sports car, Tesla Motors in California, is going to get $500 million. It is about $500 million. And, I mean, they've already got cars on the road. They're building cars. They say, with just this one two-seat sports car, which is a heck of a thing, but it cost $110,000 each.
Saw it at the auto show.
There you go. And it's actually a Lotus Exige, E-X-I-G-E, which normally would only cost $60,000, but they've taken the bodies and the suspension, and it's Lotus makes fantastic sports cars, let me say, and they've taken out the gasoline engine, and they've put in their components, their electric motors and charging units and lithium batteries, and so it really is a wonderful car if you want a sports car, but it is expensive because of the retrofit cost. But as Ned, as you were mentioning, a sort of a car buff, I guess, because you knew this was going to happen. Tesla has just announced a $40,000-$50,000 sort of luxury sedan that they'll have out by 2012. That's their next model they're introducing. And
a friend of mine has it on his homepage when we were working on his computer, and he sent $5,000 in. You have to put a deposit
to get one, right? One of the first ones.
When it comes, I guess you don't want to say
Considering the Chevy Volt, which is just a hybrid, it's not even a plug-in hybrid, so it's still going to, you know, it's not going to operate.
$40,000.
Right, it's $40,000, so this is only $5,000 or $10,000, and you can save up your other money over the next 2 years.
This is an all-electric car.
But if it is all electric, the Tesla S, I think it's called, for a sedan. In any event, it is their four-door sedan, and it's a luxury sedan. Sort of looks like a BMW or that Hyundai that you were mentioning.
Genesis.
I mean, it's that kind of size car and performance. And we're not saying it's a sports sedan.
It's a sleek car.
It's sleek looking.
It's not a boxy thing. It's
right. Well, and made in America. It's a startup, entrepreneurial spirit. They've been struggling, but they're going to make their first profit in the third quarter this year, they say.
And they're associated in California.
Yeah, they're based in California. They don't have plants anywhere else. But at least they're making the cars in the U.S., and it's all U.S. Design team and ownership.
That's pretty cheap at $40,000, considering the Chevy Volt is $40,000.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And it's too bad that Ford is trying to make all their car lines with their $5.9 billion more energy efficient, and they're upgrading factories in several places, including Michigan, but also Illinois and Kentucky, to produce their next generation of fuel-efficient vehicles. But not necessarily. I mean, I haven't read anywhere that Ford is coming up with an all-electric car yet. But that is the way to go, certainly, with battery technology improving next couple of years. What could be more trouble-free than just batteries and an electric motor? And there's no pollution. I mean, it's so basic. You know, you talk about problems with a car like carburation or spark plugs, or it's just an electric motor that runs from batteries. And it's just a great idea and will be, even though...
Tesla seems to have a greater, longer range than any other electric car.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, that's what theirs was stupefying to me. I forget the number. I mean, it was considerably more.
About 150 miles on a charge.
I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, for a battery-powered car these days, that's a lot. Of course, the hybrids, whenever their batteries give out, they automatically switch over to their gasoline engines that are also there. But you got two engines in the car, and they got to seamlessly go back and forth, you know, and start and stop the gasoline engine. For example, when you pull to a stop in a Ford hybrid, the gasoline engine turns off. I mean, it just shuts itself down, ignition off. And then the electric motor starts you up from the light, and then at about, I think it's about 30 miles an hour, the car automatically senses this is the efficient time to start up the engine, the gas engine, and switch over.
What does that do to starters? Wears them out every 6 months?
Well, it's basically the same system in the Toyota Prius now, too.
Is that what that is?
And the systems, in fact, Ford bought a lot of their drivetrain components from Toyota for their Escape because they had to get it on the market and they couldn't figure out how to do it.
Why would Toyota sell it to them?
To make a profit. You think Toyota sold it to them cheap? At net cost?
I wouldn't have sold it
to them. No, they're charging extra money there, but... and Ford said, you know, we'll give you a quantity here and maybe get a little discount. But you know, Toyota had to sell them some parts, although the system is a different design. Just like the Honda Insight is a hybrid that Honda just brought out.
It's got a different principle?
It's a hybrid, but it's a different way of connecting the electric engine, electric motor, and the gasoline engine. So I don't want to get technical, folks, but it's good that this is a loan and that these companies are going in the right direction. And everybody should try to get a car. If you got to buy a car, and most people have to have a car of some sort, make it more energy efficient. Why not try to save money on gas and help the environment in the next couple of years? There's going to be some really good choices in about 2 years, including all electric cars, whether they're Tesla or whatever. And as soon as the plug-in hybrids come out, and Toyota said that their next Prius, the current one, the new Prius, is called the Prius 3 or third generation. When they have their fourth generation Prius in 2011, it'll be the plug-in type, and just explain to our listeners how great that is. It means that they have a few more batteries on board, including the gas engine, though, but the batteries will power the car until the batteries are down, and then the gasoline engine takes over. So that means that if you drive only in the city, say, within 60 miles...
Well, there's still a gasoline engine.
Yeah, but only to charge the batteries when the... or to run the car when the batteries go down. So if you're only just driving back and forth to work, and that's within 60 miles in the day, and then you plug in at night to charge up the batteries, you might get, because you almost never use the gasoline engine then, even though it's sitting there and you got gas in a small tank, 150 to 200 miles to a gallon. Because basically the car is an electric car, but the gasoline engine is just there in emergency if you want to go further than the 60 miles in the same day.
Does the Tesla have a gasoline engine?
No, not at all. No, it's just electric. Yeah. So if its batteries go down, you're dead. I mean, you got to have an extension cord and find an outlet somewhere.
So when you get to 100 miles, you find a plug-in place.
For a Tesla.
You spend 50 miles for the Tesla.
Right. For you got to plan your trips with the Tesla Roadster, even though it has 150-mile range. For example, if you wanted to drive 150 miles, which is no big deal, just a couple hours drive, especially in that Tesla sports car, you stop at a motel, but you've got to like call ahead and say, hey, can I get a motel room that's close to electric plug that's close to my car?
They'll be promoting that pretty soon.
They will, of course. Yeah.
Motel 6 will tell you.
Yeah, free electrical outlet for electric cars.
I don't know if it's free, but at least we got the outlet.
Well, we have one on campus here because we have one faculty member that drives his electric car in from Royal Oak every day.
They made it for him?
No, he has it's not legal on the big time highways. It's a neighborhood electric car. So it's legal for up to 35 to 40 miles per hour on any roads. But if your roads are rated for a speed higher than that, like Southfield Expressway, he can't do that. So he drives down Evergreen. He drives down Evergreen Road from Royal Oak. He just takes small roads, residential roads, and he comes down Evergreen, and that comes, through Detroit and so on. And it just takes him, he said, 10 minutes more than if he was driving in his regular car on Southfield Expressway. And it's sort of open air. He's got a roof on it, but it's like a golf cart on the side. Yeah. It's a Chrysler company import called GEM, GEM. And it's a neighborhood vehicle category, which means it can't be driven on roads more than like 40 miles an hour legally. But under that, it's legal on the road. So now his problem is his range is only 25 miles. So when he gets here, he's got to plug in to charge up, or he can't get back to Royal Oak.
Can't get home.
Yeah. So his range is very small. It doesn't have many batteries in it. But it's real cute. It cost him, oh, my God, what did it cost him? $8,000? $10,000.
The question is, who arranged the hookup for him here?
Oh, he did research. Oh, our
just under 10 volt.
Yeah, it's an outlet. They had to dig a trench and extend an AC wiring from the inside of the tech building. And so they had to put an underground sort of AC wire to the parking lot, and they have a little box that pops up there, and he knows where it is, and it's just really for him. it would be cool, though, eventually, if our new parking lots, boy, they're starting to reconstruct them here. What a mess. After 3 years, we're going to have great lots. It would be great if they would think ahead and put in electrical lines for later putting in these boxes for people that wanted to drive their electric cars here. which nobody has
I'm sure there must some, they must have put a conduit so they could load them up later.
I would hope they had that thought, because that would be really cool that in 5 or 10 years
you're not going to tear the parking lot up.
We might be the only college that would have places to recharge your electric cars
when
you come to school.
And we can truly call it the green lot. Maybe there'll be a green lot.
Right. Just one lot with electrical outlets, And it'll be the good parking spaces, too,
The closest ones.
Absolutely. Right? See, that's an incentive to get an electric car. Well, that's not in place yet, folks. We're here at Henry Ford Community College. This is the new WHOVER Journal. Did I mention it's local news and views? Okay, we just did that one sort of national story, but let's move along. Did you have a story you wanted to cover from your papers, just to be fair, Ned? Back to you.
I don't know about fair, but since we're older, we might want to talk about Medicare fraud. Right here in Dearborn, God's country.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what Patrick Pepper says about that at the Dearborn Herald. Federal prosecutors in U.S. District Court on Thursday unsealed health care fraud indictments against more than 30 metropolitan Detroiters accused of falsely billing Medicare for services not medically necessary, or in many cases not even performed, which is really a venial sin. More than a dozen of the indictments are tied to businesses based in Dearborn and Lincoln Park. The indictments came as part of a nationwide crackdown on Medicare fraud and also included arrests in Denver and Miami, where much of the Detroit scheme is believed to have originated. Investigations was led by the U.S. Department of Justice. That's really interesting and welcome news. In one case, investigators alleged that Oakland County resident Sarah Shand masterminded approximately $18.3 million in false Medicare claims through several of his interrelated businesses from 2003 to 2007. I wonder what kind of business that somebody could do that. He must be a doctor or a medical laboratory.
Yeah, I think we're always looking for segues on the radio, folks. That's transitions. On the front of that edition, or no, there's another one.
Which one?
I'm reaching across and grabbing it. We mentioned the Dearborn Building and Safety Department that does, permits for construction and all kinds of things about...
another fraud issue.
Yeah, well, they've been split up into three separate departments now. That happened last week.
Really?
And so maybe that will keep it more honest, so that they're organized differently and they report differently now. And this reorganization has been in the plans for years, and just so many vested interests. And of course, twice in the last year and a half, FBI investigators came into Building and Safety Department buildings and grabbed files and arrested people. And those people were on suspension from the city. And now, as it says here in the paper from...
what were they doing?
From Wednesday, July 8th, Times Herald, and just our listeners say, wait a minute, it's only the third today that we're doing the show. The Times Herald for next week is already published, folks. A little preemptive strike there, if you will, because they probably wanted to have a holiday weekend, extended weekend here. But the good news is that now they went through all those documents, and they have the FBI has filed these charges in the U.S. Attorney's Office. And so some of these, it's bribery. It's mainly bribery charges, it looks like here. I won't go into the details.
They're giving building permits, and right. They're not supposed to?
Yeah, or if there's violations, they turn the other head, or they tear up documents. The usual things that happen in terms of building. And falsifying performance bonds, certifying temporary
for
certificates of occupancy. Right, yeah, it's a little special favors that really shouldn't be given, or maybe aren't fully researched, but if you give me enough money, I'll do it now for you.
Well, an owner may want to have a permit that's...
Right.
In occupational, the occupied.
Right. So at this point, they've only filed the bribery charge against one clerk, a former clerk there. But there may be other.
Is he identified, or they don't bother?
The woman's name is Letitia Bozeman. She lives in Inkster.
Oh.
One count of bribery concerning programs receiving federal funds. That's how it's a federal crime here, not just a court
fine. And now you can be a non-resident in Dearborn and work for the city as well.
Yes, that's. I don't think that's ever been otherwise here, but in any event,
there was a time you had to be.
I know Detroit did. It's like Detroit policemen had to live in the city.
Yeah, but so
firemen maybe
in the old days at Mayor Hubbard.
Oh,
I
yeah?
think you had to live here.
Okay, I'm not. You're so much senior
little,
to me.
I'm a little older than you.
Not much. Anyway, it's nice to see that that justice is beginning and continuing, and we'll see what happens there. You mentioned, though, too, about the charges against the people doing the Medicare fraud, and that's a medical issue. By the way, the doctor they roped into this is out in Farmington Hills. He wasn't a Dearborn doctor, but the actual people doing the fraud and the planning behind it were pretty much based in Dearborn, and there was some clinic that was Wyandotte, was it? That was actually filling the or validating that they did therapy or whatever when there was no therapy needed. You know, that's how they got the billing.
Are the owners of the businesses located in Dearborn? Is that what?
Well, I'm just saying. Yeah, look to me from reading the article, and I don't have it in front of me right now. Is that the people that had done the planning on this fraud were Dearborn, a couple of Dearborn residents. But it doesn't matter. Fraud happens everywhere. But Medicare does have a lot of fraud, unfortunately, which I just can't understand. I'm just so darned honest about things. I just don't think it's fair for some people to even think about or plan.
The problem is it happens with doctors.
Yeah,
you know, it's not that they're not making enough money, is it?
Right. They somehow gave a kickback to this one doctor in Farmington Hills to sign his name on these things as if they were legitimate. He knew that it wasn't legitimate, so he was getting a kickback. And, of course, actually, some doctors are not doing as well as you might think. Just because you're a doctor doesn't mean you're rich. Some practices are not as profitable as others. So, now, just as long as we're on health reform, last week my co-host was Susan Morrell, who's our news director here. And she, of course, and I did about half the show on
single payer,
which is different than what is being proposed right now. Yeah. And what we have right now is very different without federal government involved really at all, except when you get to Medicare. Well, this is the current issue I'm looking at right now from Consumer Reports, your trusted source of...
Okay, the last one, Top Kitchen Appliances.
Top Kitchen Appliances, it says on the front. But they have a background piece, long background piece, about healthcare reform and four myths or fears... five that they want to rebut right now.
Okay.
And yeah, rebut and dispute, rebut. Anyway, so just listen to these real quick. Here's one of the fears or myths. Health reform will let faceless government bureaucrats come between you and your doctor. Obviously, it's hard to find any government bureaucrats
that's
that really
faceless.
Do not have a face, but right. Nonetheless, that's the exaggeration.
Well, I guess that's the worst kind.
The faceless. Fact is, as I know, and those who've had to use their health insurance, their private health insurance, the fact is private health insurance already comes between you and your doctor. And because each company sets its own rules, it's hard to imagine a more bureaucratic system than what we have now. Some insurers decide which doctors you can see, which hospitals you can visit, and what drugs you can take and still be covered.
Or whether you're sick or not.
And they may require copious paperwork before approving a treatment you and your doctor want. That's right, how sick you are. It's just what you said, yes. Healthcare reform would standardize claim procedures to cut down on all of that. And it would protect you from other abuses, like being rejected for coverage or paying exorbitant premiums if you got sick. Sort of like... You have auto insurance. Wonderful. You have one accident. All of a sudden, your premiums go sky high because supposedly you're a bad risk or the company needs to pay
worse than that,
for the settlement.
You're dropped and you go into a pool.
That's right. I mean, auto insurance, very similar to the problems with health insurance, but...
But that's...
it's not... Your life is directly involved here, yours and your family's. Fear number two, health reform will take away the good coverage from your job. You might already have what you think is good coverage. The answer is, the fact is, if you're satisfied with your job-based coverage, you would be able to keep it. Employers who don't offer insurance would either start or provide it or contribute to a fund that helps employees buy it on their own.
Well, they have to at that point.
Right. if there was the government program.
Even if there wasn't a government program, everybody's supposed to offer it. Everybody's supposed to be covered.
Unless, of course, there's only one system, single-payer for the whole country.
I mean, the way they're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now,
they're
right
obviously going to do what's in Massachusetts. Even if there is no government thing, everybody has to have insurance. That means all the insurance companies are going to have plans to sell to everybody.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to recommend to people, maybe some people subscribe to Consumer Reports or they go to their website. It's a very good article, and you know, Consumer Reports takes no advertising. They have their own scientists at work testing things and analyzing things. No axe to grind. Nobody's ever called them liberal or conservative. And so consumerreports.org or the August issue that says Top Kitchen Appliances on the front. It's many pages. The healthcare one that I read from is page 18, if it concerns anyone.
So that's probably where it begins.
There's several articles about reform, all the different aspects to it. So it's good to be informed. And then let your elected representatives know. And then one of the most in-depth and professional of the nonprofit organizations dealing with health and healthcare is Public Citizen. Now, this is an organization originally started by Ralph Nader many years ago. He has not been associated with it directly for a long, long time. So it's not Ralph Nader's organization. But if you're a member of Public Citizen, you also get a health letter, a little health newsletter, every month, along with your other information, because they have many causes, but they, the Public Citizen Health Research Group, the health research group, is headed by Dr. Sidney M. Wolf, who Dr. Wolf, with an E on the end, is on many talk shows, and they do analysis of these issues in a very professional and even scientific way. And I just want to say that the current health letter from the Public Citizen Health Research Group has a great comparison of how single-payer healthcare would differ from the multiple-payer universal coverage, which is currently being negotiated by the House and Senate. So they're not talking about, it's not on the table again, universal coverage single-payer plan. And boy, is there a difference. This goes on two pages, and you can clearly see that I think most of you would want the universal coverage of a single-payer plan rather than what's being proposed, and I'm sure it's what we're going to get stuck with because nothing else is being proposed. No single-payer plans.
The Democrats are not proposing it.
They're not proposing it, and therefore they're in the majority. It's not going to happen. So
they're scared of Louise and what the Republicans are going to do to him again.
Well, they're scared of the Republicans passing along and further mentioning all these myths about, you know, government health care will be terrible, it'll be awful, and
you have to wait in line.
Oh yeah, all that stuff. And those are myths, folks. They're just bogus myths that aren't true. And if you read professional publications that have no axe to grind, non-commercial, okay, some of them could be, you know, conservative or liberal publications, but not Public Citizen, folks. I just do not think that they're that way. You can check out their website, citizen.org. And if you want to go to their health research stuff directly, it's citizen.org/HRG, Health Research Group. But you can get that, you know, you can figure out where that is once you get to their website, citizen.org. Great comparison of single payer with universal coverage, multiple payers, which is,
you know, I can't remember last time I was here a couple of weeks ago. A friend of mine was telling me a story about his cousin, who was a French national, was visiting the United States. Unfortunately, had a very serious head injury. The French government flew a doctor and a nurse in a plane to Los Angeles and took him back to France, rather than have him be treated in the United States and the bill be sent to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was astounded by that.
Yeah,
apparently, he was very sophisticatedly treated in France, and on the way there, they figured that plane and that doctor and nurse was cheaper.
Well, I just read somewhere, credible too.
So much for waiting in line, huh?
That some of the best and least expensive dentistry in the world is in Thailand. Now, I'd be bothered by the language problem of telling my dentist what I needed to have done. But this person, the story showed, they knew what they had to have done, and they scheduled from a distance, and they went to a doctor that had good recommendations there, and they saved a fortune. They saved a fortune, even though they had to pay to fly to Thailand. So,
and they had to stay there for a week or so.
Right, because it was a multi-day operation on their jaw and
chin.
How'd
they find
out
about such a thing?
Well,
Dr.
Everything is on the internet, someplace or other. Mm-hmm. These are options. I mean, they're riskier when you have to.
Expensive. It's cheaper to go to the doctor than the dentist.
How can you go to the follow-up visits, every 6 months after that? You got to fly back to Thailand. But
you don't need it once you have the implants and the crowns and all those things.
If they did the job right, you wouldn't have to go back, I guess. I'd like to just play a Jim Hightower comment about organic food. Jim Hightower is our progressive commentator from Texas. Always very entertaining. And I have a comment of his about the 4th of July that I'm going to finish the show with today. Something to look forward to. But we'll be right back after this
PSA.
It's an editorial comment from Jim Hightower.
I thought we were saving it to the last.
No, this is on his comments on organic. At the end, his comments on the 4th of July, he didn't record them. So I got to read them from a piece of paper. So that's the way life goes. Here is Jim Hightower on organic food.
What's the number one outdoor activity in America? Not baseball, soccer, jogging, or golf. Instead, it's gardening. I happen to be part of this happy activity. Maintaining a small organic garden in my yard lets me dig in compost, rejoice at ripening tomatoes, clip fresh herbs, and devour the luscious results. So when Michelle Obama recently planted an organic garden on the White House lawn, I joined gardeners and organic food advocates all across the country in applauding this symbolic stand for good food, the environment, and common sense. Not everyone joined in the joy, however. An outfit called the Mid-American Crop Life Association, or MACA, was in a full-tilt snit over this first garden. MACA is the lobbying front for such pesticide purveyors as Monsanto, Dow, and DuPont, not a bunch that's simpatico with the organic movement. Indeed, MACA executives zipped out an alarmist notice to their members. Did you hear the news, they ask. The White House is planning to have an organic garden. The thought of it being organic made us shudder. Well, they'd better get used to shuddering, for political leaders from coast to coast are getting on board with the good food movement. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, for example, is putting an organic garden on the National Mall to encourage visitors to plant their own back home. Also, governors and mayors from Annapolis to Sacramento are vying with each other to put in the biggest and best organic gardens. In Baltimore, Mayor Sheila Dixon notes that her plot in front of City Hall is nearly twice as big as the White House garden. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, these are symbolic gestures, but symbolism is a powerful tool for educating the public and affirming the virtues of local, sustainable, non-chemical food production. Let's all join together and spread that organic word from coast to coast.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
And we want to recommend that people go to their local farm markets to buy a lot of food that's raised organically. Maybe it's not officially certified as organic because that takes some money. You actually have to get people to test it and analyze it. And then even the organic certification is not 100% guaranteeing that it's totally natural, by the way. But local farmers generally who use fewer pesticides and sprays because they can't afford them, as the big company, the corporate farms, worldwide, generally that food has less chemicals and preservatives that might be dangerous to your body, long-term at least. And so we highly recommend that you check out your local farm market. And, of course, listen every Friday morning at 10:30 a.m., weather permitting. Yours truly is down at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market by the Bryant Public Library on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn, telling you what's fresh and who's walking around. And
is it in their parking lot?
Yes, it actually is in the parking lot. Well, it's actually a parking lot that it's a paid lot behind Buddy's Pizza. Mm-hmm. Buddy's has its own little free lot of its own, but it's not very big. And so it's directly behind the Buddy's restaurant. But it, in fact, it's also the closest parking lot to the Bryant Library.
Where would you park when we get into our little segue about parking? Is there anywhere to park?
At the Bryant lot. It's only half the lot that's taken up with the vendors. And the other half, there's room for cars, which are always coming and going because people go and they shop. Takes about half an hour. And if you get out in a half an hour, there's no charge. If you're there up to 30 minutes, there is no charge.
Oh, yeah.
And most people can go there. There's only 18 or 20 vendors. And although if you talk to people and you really browse, and if you buy a lot, you might be there over that half hour, so it'll be 50 cents.
There's no wholesalers there.
No, not
really.
They're
all farmers.
They're all pretty much all farmers. Some of them are... I gather they're like franchisers of products that have limited availability, like certain kinds of bags of nuts and snacks and salad dressings that I figure they don't do it themselves, but they're there because they bought a quantity and they're reselling it. And it's something more unique than what you get in the store.
If you go to the farmer's market in Detroit, you see the farmers selling honey and things like that.
Yeah, we have honey. Yep. Today it was Bing cherries and fresh raspberries that were especially out there. Oh, my goodness. It was so tempting to buy $50 worth of cherries. But anyway, here's sad news about the high school situation. You know, this is the new WHFR Journal. We're making waves, doing things differently than other stations. Local news and views on this show. Dearborn Public Schools are curtailing middle school music offerings. Personnel shifts hit sour note for Edsel Ford music supporters. Here's the story. Fewer music classes for younger students and upcoming staff changes at Edsel Ford High School have struck a sour note for music supporters as school administrators argue they cannot afford to offer classes for only a handful of students, but said they hope new initiatives will draw more middle school students to music in the coming years. Four Edsel Ford students voiced concerns at the school board's June 16th meeting. They were especially worried about Tricia Volkner's layoff. That's V-O-E-L-K-N-E-R. Patricia. Her name is Tricia Volkner. Volkner has run the instrumental programs at the school, including performances for the musical, since she came to Edsel Ford 8 years ago. Imagine, they're laying off a teacher who's been there 8 years. That's a lot of seniority to have to hit the layoffs.
What do you usually need, 10 or 12?
Well, it just, they're scraping the barrel there. I mean, yes, some teachers have been there 20, 30 years, but a lot of, I mean, if you start laying off more people without hiring new people in, anymore, and this has been going on the last several years, you're going to start laying off people who've been there 15 years or more. And that's just crazy. All the experience and knowledge, and it's just the wrong thing to do, says a teacher like myself, you know, to lay off teachers. I mean, you know, obviously teachers believe you could lay off a few principals and nobody would notice, but that's not really true.
What do the teachers think about the people that work 20, 30 years in the auto industry are laid off?
Well, I'm sure they have similar sympathies, you know. Although education always has to be done. It's not a product like cars. And if you make a car that's just not attractive to people to buy when there's so many choices, well, then the company may go out of business, just like most businesses. You don't have the right product or service, and your profits go down, and then your sales drop even more, and you've got to lay people off, and then eventually you're bankrupt. But schools can't go bankrupt. At least they're not supposed to, even though California is bankrupt now. But the schools theoretically have to have a balanced budget, and so they have to do cutbacks. But the learning has to go on. Has to go on and continue somehow. But it's really hard to do it when you have, like, 35, 40 students in a classroom and you don't have the right tools, textbooks, apparatus to do experiments, demonstrations, computers, of course, are part of this. You need the latest and best computers and software programs for the students. Just to let you know, though, that the music is not totally gone at Fordson. It's not all bleak, it says in the story. Fordson High School's part-time music teacher will be switched to full-time, said Lisa Meyer, the music resource teacher for the district. Oh, whoop-de-doo. Okay. So there's going to be some switching
that
around.
That doesn't make any sense. Where's the logic in there?
Well, there's going to be just fewer classes, but it won't kill the program completely. And I just wanted to mention is that a book, I just became aware of a new book from Oliver Sacks. Now, that's S-A-C-H-S. He's a famous neuroscientist who specializes in how the brain works. Oliver Sacks, in fact, had a movie made about him based on several case studies that he had written up in a book called Awakenings. And this is, I think, about 6 to 8 years ago. This was a big Hollywood feature film. It starred Robin Williams as the neurologist in charge of this mental hospital who was encountering these difficult cases and had to find creative, clever ways to understand them and to treat the people. And it was all based on the real-life experiences of Oliver Sacks. And he's written several other books. One, I love the title, The Man Who Thought His Wife Was a Hat.
What's the point of all this?
The point is that Oliver Sacks' new book is called Musicophilia. And it's just one of three or four new books that came out this last year where scientists studying the mind and the brain are finding out how important music and the appreciation of music and even becoming a musician and learning to perform music, even badly, trying to play the piano,
has a
tremendous value. Well, that movie doesn't talk about music per se, but the latest books, including Oliver Sacks' book, which is called Musicophilia, which is not a disease, but it shows that there's they do electronic CAT scans of the brain when you're listening to music or when you're playing music yourself, when you're performing music, and it grows your brain's capabilities in amazing ways. Not just Mozart, but any sort of music that you like, and that you try to perform yourself too. Now, listening to music is wonderful, but performing it is so that I think. This research
is the trick that does the cure.
Yeah. Well, I think this research may lead in a few years to the realization that music is central to every educational curriculum. And yes, it means even maybe forcing every student to learn to play an instrument somewhere in their educational process.
I thought what you were going to get to by this, which is another research for schooling, is that schools begin too early in their bodily function. They can't really learn. There's a five-hour period, and it doesn't begin at 7:30.
Yes, they're supposedly.
I went to school. School began at 8:45 in New York State, and it ended at 3 o'clock. School over here begins at 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning.
They are changing that. They have said that, and I hope it starts this. I hope it starts this this fall. Is that 7 a.m. is too early to start kids who stay up late. They just don't get enough sleep. They watch TV or whatever till 11 or 12, just not the right thing to do for so many reasons.
Why did they do it?
Probably because parents that worked wanted to drop their kids off on their way to their work at 8 o'clock, so they wanted to drop the kids off at 7:30.
What on earth would they do with them at 1:30, 2 o'clock?
Well, there's after-school programs or daycare in many lower-level schools where they could pick the kid up at 5 or 6, after they're sort of watched over or have these extracurricular programs like sports or theater or something in the afternoon. But yeah, well, that may be changing, though, Ned, so that's the good news there. But wouldn't it be amazing if this research, and there's a lot of validity to it, shows that music instruction, music education is central to the development of a good, strong, vital human mind. That's right, opening it up and making it work better, just making all the circuits fire. Somebody listening to Bach, that's B-A-C-H, Bach, classical, they showed the CAT scan on television on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, where he had Oliver Sacks interviewed a couple days ago.
Oh, really?
And whoa, the neurons were firing all over the brain. So right brain, left brain, you know, your logical side, your emotional side, that nothing
just cleared up the circuits
can do that kind of stimulation and excitement, but music. And even more so, they said certain of the brains physically are better developed. I mean, there's more cells if they're also performers of music, if they, you know, actually read and play an instrument, that whole nother aspect of the human mind opens up and becomes accessible in what you do in everyday life too.
That's so. Got to be good news for people who type.
I don't think it's the same thing. Oh, maybe if they played in a rhythm or something, they typed a rhythm.
You got to know where all the keys are. You can't look.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, we're coming down to 8 minutes to the end of the show. I wanted to mention the update on the paid parking issue. Last week I mentioned from the story in the Dearborn Times Herald, I think, that West Dearborn and Dearborn area developer Hakeem Fakhouri had said that he wants to file suit against the city of Dearborn. And now the update on this, again, also J. Patrick Pepper writing for the Dearborn Times Herald, it's expected to be filed in July. And who's behind it is not just Fakhouri, but members of the West Dearborn Bar and Restaurant Association, which probably includes Fakhouri. But he got, in other words, Fakhouri got the whole
association.
West Dearborn Bar and Restaurant Association. Now, this is not the same as the West Dearborn
Businesses.
Downtown Development Authority.
Right.
That's a different kind of unit, but
they're regular
probably
businesses.
A lot of the same people there. But this is just bars and restaurants. Okay, in West Dearborn, and they have their own little group, and they're thinking of suing the city. Of course, many details must be worked out before it says any filing must be takes place. Still undetermined is whom or what would be listed as defendants. So who are the people that were so hurt? Because that has to be proved in court. Among the options mentioned are the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority and the city. Oh, defendants, the people that they're suing. So they're suing this legal authority for approving it, and then the city of Dearborn, too. So we don't, I mean, they got to have some lawyers working on this, obviously, but what they want.
The council eventually approved it, so.
Well, if they sue the city, they're suing the council, right. Yeah. What they want, of course, is to immediately get paid parking stopped in West Dearborn.
Because it's not good for them.
It doesn't seem to be helping business. And this is the worst time to have paid parking. And they do have a statement here also from one of my favorite restaurants in West Dearborn that's still there. Parisian Bistro co-owner, formerly the Salad Bar, Naziel Kadri, K-A-D-R-Y. And he says, if they don't stop paid parking, there's not going to be any businesses left.
I avoid the place like a plague.
Mm. Well, I have to say, we had a little WHFR party, which you came to.
No, unfortunately, I forgot all about it.
Didn't I see you there?
No.
Tuesday night?
I go to everything, but I forgot all
okay.
about it.
Okay, Ned attends almost everything for us, and we had a little freebie party. It seems that some people on our staff, two staff members, they won the use of Bailey's bars, sort of like their rental facility, which is their basement, which is all fixed up sort of for like private affairs and parties.
Oh, is that how we got it?
Free pizza, free wings, and rather than using it for themselves, they said, let's make it a WHFR party. And
Did the pizza and the wings come with the what they want?
Yeah, came with the prize.
The great
idea. Of course, you had to pay for your beverages, but it was interesting. It was $2 pint night. So if you drink beers, they have a lot of beers, and that's, I guess, cheap. I don't
pint,
go out of much.
16
ounces.
16 ounces.
Yeah. For $2, that's a good deal. And so I went over there, of course, and part of the party at 7 p.m., and then at 10 when I left, I go upstairs. The place is packed with people, and this is paid parking, okay? I mean, it's a weeknight. It's Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And the parking lot, the paid lot, was packed behind Bailey's. Now, I did ask people to go around to those venues in West Dearborn. And they said, well, Tuesday, the $2 a pint thing is such a big deal. That's why so many people show up. But they also mentioned, they said a lot of kids from Dearborn are back from college now. You know, colleges get out in May. and they like to party every night. So drink, you know, they're 21 or older, and they said they really make sure they go for the $2 per pint deal there. So that's obviously not the answer for all the establishments, but I'm saying those people didn't seem to mind about the paid parking. They do point out here that during the day for like lunches and that,
it's not expensive. It's just annoying.
Right. Just annoying. It's only 50 cents an hour. It's not a big deal. In fact, I said here on the show, just because we always have alternative ideas, that, what the heck? Why don't you make it $1 an hour? Make it something significant, you know, since you're losing money on it anyway. Cause it is so dirt cheap, but it is just a hassle. Like the lot behind Parisian Bistro, it's quarters. A couple of times I go over there and I think I'll pay my way in. They'll be, but the machines take quarters. I don't have any quarters. So I got to run in. I got to get quarters change. I got to come back out, put them in. And even at Bailey's, I forgot. I thought I was only going to be there 2 hours, and I put in enough quarters for 2 hours. Had to go back out at 9 o'clock and toss in some more quarters. So it's a hassle. There's no doubt about it. If you don't plan ahead. So we'll see what happens there, see how the city responds to that. I bet they'll wait to see the lawsuit and then get legal advice from the city attorney to see if they really are in trouble there. I doubt they have many grounds. I mean, everything the city has done is legal. You know, even though it's bad for business, it's still legal. So
they don't care. They're not in business.
The people of Dearborn voted voted paid parking in 3-4 years ago.
So that's it.
And so the people have spoken. That's right. I think the better approach is those West Dearborn businesses, they should have started up another petition drive. Get on the November ballot to end paid parking. Let the people speak again.
Well, we better get to our Hightower piece. Yep. I don't know how long it is.
No, we're going to gotta finish it.
We need to cover that because we promised it to be the end. Ned is very good at
keeping his own schedule here. 4th of July, he says, Jim Hightower. The 4th of July is a celebration of agitation. Let's keep this in mind, folks. Are you an agitator, says Jim Hightower? You know, one of those people who won't leave well enough alone, who always questioning authority and trying to stir things up? If so, the powers that be detest you. You agitator. They spit the term out as a pejorative to brand anyone who dares to challenge the established order. Oh, they scoff. Our people didn't mind living next to that toxic waste dump until those environmental agitators got them upset. Corporate chieftains routinely wail that, quote, our workers were perfectly happy until those union agitators started messing with their minds. Hightower goes on, in each case, the message is that America would be a fine country if only we could get rid of those pesky troublemakers who get the hoi polloi agitated about one thing or another. And his response to that, which I can see on the radio, his comment to that, he says, bovine excrement. That's what he thinks that is. And I think we can say that on the radio. That's how he assesses that comment. He says, were it not for the agitators, we wouldn't have an America. The 4th of July would just be another hot day. We'd be singing God Save the Queen, and our government officials would be wearing white powdered wigs. Agitators created America, and it's their feisty spirit and outright rebelliousness that we celebrate on our national holiday. He says, I don't merely refer to the founders either. Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, James Madison, Ben Franklin, and the rest certainly were daring do agitators when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, creating the framework for a democratic republic. But they didn't actually create much democracy. In the first presidential election, only 4% of the people were even eligible to vote. No women were allowed, no African Americans, no American Indians, and no one who was landless, who didn't own property, could vote. So, on the 4th, Jim Hightower says, it's neither the documents of democracy that we celebrate, nor the authors of the documents. Rather, it's the intervening 2+ centuries of ordinary American agitators who have struggled mightily against formidable odds to democratize those documents. And he says, America's great rebellion didn't end with the British surrender at Yorktown. That's all the time we have for today. You can go to jimhightower.com and take a look at all of his opinions. They certainly are thought-provoking. Thank you for listening to us here on the new WHFR Journal. Thank you, Ned, for being here in the studio as my co-host today. And good luck on your campaign. We'll talk to you more about that later. So we're going to go off with our...